I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. This is episode number 205. Go ahead, John.
All right. Yeah, and that is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a Hugo-winning podcaster for the SF Signal podcast. That's so me. Congratulations, Patrick.
Thank you.
I enjoyed the last bunch of – I listened to a few of our last podcasts where we were like talking about did he win, did he not win? Because no, it was when we were recording those podcasts, it was a couple of days before they announced it. But congratulations, well-deserved for the SF Signal podcast. Maybe we can get on the ballot next year for Functional Nerds. Maybe.
Did you see Gail Carriger give the speech for me?
I didn't. I heard about it, but I know you had some nice jokes written for Gail, so that's pretty cool.
I slid in their Robert Silverberg joke. I thanked him for always doing his speech after the fan awards.
Yeah, so that's good. So congratulations on that, Patrick. And you can check out Patrick's website. It's atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And today, we are delighted to be joined by Stephen Gould. He is the author of Jumper, Helm, Seventh Sigma, and his new book, EXO, which is book four of the Jumper series. He's also the current president of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. I just wrote the initials there and I'm like, oh God, I hope I have that right. You could check out his website, which is eatourbrains.com/Steve, and you can follow him on Twitter at Stephen Gould. And Stephen, thank you for joining us today.
I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah. So, you know, lots of interesting things to talk about with you. I did a lot of research on you this week and I got a lot of cool things to talk about. But before, so we aren't remiss, why don't you tell, you know, I think people know you well for your Jumper series of books, and, you know, Jumper got made into a movie. And but your new book, EXO, is the newest book in the series. So why don't you tell our listeners, before we get into anything else, a little bit about that book and a little bit about the series in general.
Okay. Well, Jumper is in the hoary SF tradition of people who can teleport, going back at least until Alfred Bester's The Star's My Destination, and, you know, even Star Trek's Transporter Beam, or Phyllis Eisenstein was writing some stuff right before I started in fantasy called Born to Exile, again about someone who could teleport. So Davey, my protagonist for the first two books, is essentially me. And by that I mean every time Davey encounters a new thing, life, normal human thing, it sort of reflects things that were happening in my life. In the first book, he jumps out of two terrible, terrible, you know, things that are potentially awful. The first one is a very nasty child abuse incident with his alcoholic father. Another is an attempted sexual assault with a bunch of truckers, which is why Jumper was one of the top 100 banned books in America from 1999 until that evil woman J.K. Rowling came along and knocked us all off the bottom of the list. And so that's a lesson. If you want to be on the list, you want your most objectionable scenes to be right there at the very beginning of the book, where a parent can pick it up and look at it as the child has brought it home from the library. Okay, so anyway, in Jumper, he is the only one who can teleport. In Reflex, its sequel, his wife, Millie, probably through exposure to being jumped thousands of times and then having a life-threatening thing happen to her, can jump. And in the third book, Impulse, their daughter, pretty much for the same reasons, can teleport. And their daughter's name is Scent. Their mother is Millicent. She's Millicent, but the mother's Millie. She's Scent. And in each book, I expand the capabilities of what they can do with teleportation. And though I'm very careful to remain within the parameters that are set up in the very first book, everything that has happened in as far as teleportation goes was was implied from the conditions of the first book. So in the second book, Davy discovers, among other things, how to leave a hole open when he teleports. And then his daughter discovers how to, while they're always changing velocity, right? If you go from the equator to the North Pole, you're actually changing your rotational velocity as the planet spins almost 600 kilometers per hour, right? Almost enough to go Mach. So you can't, if you carried that velocity with you as you jumped, you would suddenly be going sideways, you know, fast enough to pulverize against the nearest wall. So clearly they're matching velocities, but she wow. discovers how to essentially jump in the same place and but change the velocity there, so which effectively gives her ballistic capabilities. She is not superhuman, so suddenly taking off at 200 miles an hour, or the first time she figures out how to do it, the first time she does it, she literally blackens her eyes, has most of her clothes ripped, shredded, or torn off of her, and so on. So it's not a case of super person flying around, but
that's one of the things. That's one of the things I liked about the '90s pseudo sort of reboot of The Flash with Wally West. He took over when Barry Allen sacrificed himself to save the DC universe. So he could shred his clothes running. That's why he right. had to wear the suit.
Right. And that's, I think they're pretty true to that in the new boot, right? In the new series, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't watched it yet. I've just seen some of the trailers.
But, yeah, I'm hoping. Yeah, it looks like they're, yeah. once again, they're kind of merging what Barry Allen did and what Wally West did into kind of a pseudo sort of character. Whatever. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
We'll see. I don't tend to watch TV series as they happen. I sort of let them get out of there, and then I do a binge watch if I've decided I want to watch. And that's one I've sort of marked for, watching later.
Shannon McGuire does the same thing. She won't watch a series until the first season DVD has been released.
Got it. Or on Netflix.
Or on Netflix, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like sort of the same version. I know there are people that still will not read the George R.R. Martin books until he finishes. I'm not reading them until...
They want to wait until Brandon Sanderson finishes them. I understand. that made him laugh.
That was good. That was a good one. Okay.
George is a friend of mine, so...
we love George here. I'm a big fan, and I think Patrick is too. But, you were talking about the ability to jump. And yesterday on my... I Facebooked and Twittered that we were going to be having you on the show, and I asked people if they had any questions, and a couple people had emailed a few questions, and one from Jay Faulkner, who's one of my friends on Facebook. He asked, and you kind of alluded to it, now this seems to be spoiling the series, so you probably can't answer this question, but is the ability to jump, is it just Davy and people related to him, or is there other reasons for it too? That seems like you're spoiling the whole series if you answer that question now, but...
Well, I don't think so. I think, you could have made a case for his daughter having a genetic indication there that would do it. But
his wife.
But his wife is not genetically, related, right?
Well, where are they from originally? Are they from Kentucky?
Davy is from Ohio, and Millie is from Oklahoma/...
That was a joke about my own Southern family past.
And, sure. We could have gone with West Virginia there as well. Yeah, so clearly the implication to me has always been that it's something that with enough experience of the phenomenon, it's possibly learned, that, which is sort of like, there's a wonderful book by Alan E. Norse called The Universe Between. And it's not so much about teleportation, but literally this ability to turn this corner that is sort of 90 degrees to our normal universe. And you actually end up in an alternate, a parallel Earth. And then you can travel through that Earth a bit and turn the corner again and you're back in ours, and you have effectively teleported, even though it takes time, because you're literally walking, you're literally moving. Though the weird thing about the other Earth is it is so bizarre in that our ability to perceive it is completely, it's just all these shapes and weird stuff. Though oddly enough for them, it's not. It actually looks sort of like an Earth. So it's something about the perceptions and the difference of the universe. But so the implication, though, is you can learn to turn that corner or whatever it is. In my case, of course, we're actually opening a hole, right, between two different places, because if you can't leave a hole open if there's actually not bringing the spaces together. And that's important. So in the fourth book, you know, I talked about the third book. In the fourth book, she takes this motion stuff and takes it actually out into space, which is no, which is all over the place, so it's no longer a secret. And also tends to be the scene I read at signings.
Excellent. And one of the other questions I got sort of can piggyback on what you just said is, so is the Jumper series going to be continuing after EXO? Do you have plans to write more books in this series?
I probably will write books in the series, more books in the series. I don't have a clear conception yet of what that story would be. I have some ideas, but I do have a very clear conception of my next solo book, which is probably going to be a sequel to my Seven Sigma, the book about the robots in the American Southwest that eat all the metal. But I also have an obligation to write four novels for Jim Cameron. And so...
An obligation? That sounds like a contract.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, I do have a contract. Ted, should I talk about that at all?
You know, we can get into that in the main interview portion, because I did want to ask you a little bit about your involvement with James Cameron and that. But, you know, for now, let's actually move on to our picks of the week, and then maybe we'll get back into that. So let's do our picks.
Picks of the week.
And I'll go first this week, and I'm going to pick a book, and the book that I'm going to pick is Lockstep by Carl Schrader. Is it Schrader or Schroeder? Do we know how to pronounce Carl's last name? I think it's Schrader, I believe. I met Carl. We were both guests at FenCon a couple years ago. And this book I had gotten sent to me, We have this distinct problem that we're not distinct. I think a lot of podcasts and book reviewers have this excellent problem of having lots of books sent to them. And unfortunately, there's not enough time to read all the books. And it's one that I looked at and I was like, yeah, it looks pretty good. But then I believe it was io9 or tor.com that wrote about the world building in Lockstep and how they were just obsessed with the world building in this. And I'm like, that looks interesting. So the concept of the book is that, you know, in brief, it's that there's, people hibernate and the universe, like it's, you know, in the future, a couple hundred years into the future, and people go to different planets and areas. And they sort of, one group of people hit upon this idea of going, they had like these cicada beds, they called them, and they like would hibernate. And eventually they figured out that when they were hibernating, they can have their machines and robots harvest whatever planet or asteroid or whatever they were on. So they would be sleeping for 30 years. All these resources would get built up because no one was using them. And then they'd wake up, but they would, so the lockstep was that it would be sleep for 30 years, wake for 1 month. That's how, and so in the book, when you get there, there are thousands of worlds that are on this lockstep, because then the other thing that happens is then you can travel, because one of Carl's thoughts on this, and I've read a few interviews with him, was that, well, we don't have faster than light travel, but if we can sleep for 30 years while we go there, then now all of a sudden this opens up all sorts of trade between planets. So I just thought that was a really interesting concept. And then about how some planets choose to be a part of this lockstep and some do not. So there are whole civilizations on various planets that rise and fall while the lockstep just kind of keeps humming along. I just thought it was a really interesting concept. And, hibernation is certainly not a new concept in science fiction, but I just thought it was really well done and really interesting. And I don't know if he has plans to write more books in the series. I think he does, because the article, one of the interviews interviews that I read with him is that as he was finishing the book, he just figured out all these other awesome stories that can be told within this lockstep. And it's really, I really enjoyed the universe and the writing. So it's by Carl Schrader and it's Lockstep. And that is my pick this week.
I was just going to ask if you had read his Son of Sons.
I haven't. No, this is the only book that I've read by Carl, so I'm interested to read his other works.
Definitely recommend Son of Sons, which is essentially a contained zero-G space that is the result of, like, the singularity, right? You've got all this stuff, but they are doing something to try and keep out all the current technology. So all the technology within this zero-G atmospheric space, which is thousands of miles across, is essentially steampunk-driven.
Cool. Well, you know, that's not dissimilar than Lockstep, because within the Lockstep, the technology is kind of frozen at where it sort of started at. And like all of the other people outside of the Lockstep, their technology goes further, but what's sort of implied is that when it goes further, people end up destroying themselves. So it's like, it's sort of the Lockstep is the most stable way of life, at least in that. So he sort of hits upon that concept in this too. But yeah, I will definitely check it out. Son of Sons, I will. Okay, Stephen, what's your pick this week then? Do you have one?
Well, I've been really, really busy, so I haven't been consuming as much media as I normally do. When I'm working on stuff, I tend to reread more than read new stuff because I'm not seeking there. I just recently reread Martha Wells' Roxura Cloud Roads trilogy, which is really good. Excellent. Now, she's a buddy, so...
Oh, that's okay.
She was going to Texas A&M when I was, you know, as well. I mean, I've known her since we were both baby writers. So...
Oh, excellent. No, you know, look, I kind of feel like if you can't help promote your friend's books, why are we doing this podcast? You know, that's...
Yeah. One of the issues of being in the industry, which is kind of interesting, is you've got these four states, right? You really like the writer, the person... And then you've got, or you don't know them at all. And then you've got these two intermingling states. So you've got, you love them. You love their work, the best of all worlds. You love them. You hate their work, the absolute worst of all worlds. You don't particularly like them. Unfortunately, you sort of do have a Jones or their writing is a guilty pleasure for you. So that's not so bad because you certainly don't have to have anything to do with the person. But then the last one is actually almost as good as the first one, and that is you hate them and you hate their work. So that works too. But I really like all of Martha's work. I would recommend all of it, especially some of her standalone fantasy like City of Bones and Wheel of the Infinite. She doesn't get mentioned much when people talk about diversity in fantasy, but she actually does include quite a bit. I mean, that has a person of color protagonist and who actually made it onto the cover, which is...
Wow, which is, that's awesome. Yeah. They didn't whitewash the cover?
No.
Awesome.
Excellent. Okay, so Martha Wells, that is your pick this week. Cool. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Well, 99% of the time, I always pick something that has nothing to do with me. But actually, this week, I'm picking the SF Signal podcast on social science fiction that I recorded with Jame Gates. Jame is a friend of mine. Stephen may know her peripherally.
Oh, yes.
May have met her once or twice. I don't know, you know, at a SIFLA meeting.
She actually is an employee of mine. So.
Yes. And Jame, and actually, I met Jame through John when we went to World Fantasy. And we get along, and as long as we're not at a convention together where she could actually murder me, we're good. And she has been coming to me and doing different little podcasts at SF Signal. They're fun for me because she goes out and she wrangles all the authors and gets the cast together. And all I have to do is show up and kind of moderate and record. And we've been doing a few of these, and we just had one on social science fiction, which was a lot of fun, and it was a great cast. And it should, as this episode's gone live on Tuesday, that episode went live on Monday over on SF Signal. So I'm going to suggest people go give that a listen. It was a whole lot of fun. It's always great when Jame can come on and I can torture her about rigor mortis. So
who are the guests on the panel?
Well, and it's interesting because, again, Jame was in charge of this one. So she got all the people together and it ended up being Colin Kelly, Jeremy Bernstein, Jackson Lansing, Jack Graham, and Dave Moss. She was actually kind of upset that all the women that she invited could not come on. So it ended up being a social SF podcast with all dudes.
Yeah.
Which happens to me all the time.
Yeah, I know.
Did any particular authors of social science fiction get mentioned? I mean,
there were so many. Yeah, I mean, everybody. We talked about, you know, what was your first? And so a lot of people had a different thing. Like, we talked about who do you think has like the most impact? And there's just tons of it. So it's too much to list here because we will run out of time. So I just suggest people go and give it a listen.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good. Okay. Well, then, you know, we mentioned it briefly before we got into picks, but I did want to ask you about, Stephen, that you are working with James Cameron and crew on...
No. He said Jim.
Oh, Jim. Sorry. You and your buddy Jim are, you know, you're working on the... Now, if I want to make sure. So I know you mentioned that you're going to be writing books set in the Avatar universe, but from what I read, you're also involved in the writing of the upcoming movies. Is that true?
In a sense. So what happened is I spent 5 months last year in a room with Jim Cameron and four other screenwriters working on the overall arc and the individual storylines for the next three movies. Wow. So yes, I did contribute content for that, but I'm not writing the screenplay.
Right.
So the other, during that time, I mean, we have Amanda Silver and Rick Jaffa, who wrote The Rise of the Planet of the Apes and The Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Ooh, cool.
Movies. We have, Josh Friedman, who was the showrunner on Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Ooh, that's a good one. I like that.
And he did, of course, the Spielberg War of the Worlds. And then we had Shane Salerno, who has done a lot of stuff, including he was one of the writers on Armageddon, but I don't think we can blame some of its excesses in him. But he also did this most recent biography documentary on Salinger. He was the writer, director, producer of that. He spent $7 million of his own money to produce that over like 10 years. And he worked out really well for him. But they were great. We also had a writer's assistant taking notes constantly. We had an archivist who happens to be the who's also sort of tracking stuff. She was Lisa Fitzpatrick, who does things like writes the making of books. She wrote the making of The Godfather, the making of and the making of Avatar, and she was like a co-author on The Art of Avatar, that kind of nonfiction book about movies themselves. So
it sounds like you were building a continuity.
Oh, we were. I mean, initially Cameron offloaded around 900 pages of notes to us. I mean, it was a process that went on. And then he actually said, okay, I want you to just throw in, well, actually he didn't give us the 900 pages of notes initially. What we did literally is we just spent some days talking about what about the first movie really worked. And since it's literally the most financially successful movie of all time, you know, obviously some stuff worked. And also what are some problems. And then he sent us off to just brainstorm really weird ideas. And then he downloaded his conception for the next three movies, which he has had a fairly firm some fairly interesting ideas, some of which eventually had to be pulled out because just time, and some of which, and then we came in and we worked on those. It was a very odd experience. If we've got time, I'll tell you my Vitamix blender story. But so Cameron, if you've got like 2 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Okay, so Cameron is a vegan for environmental reasons, right? And this is a relatively recent thing for him, a couple of years. But because meat production is actually a major contributor to greenhouse gas emissions, all the energy, all the wasted protein. So he drinks this shake that is just a like a power shake in the morning. It's an apple, an orange, bananas, rice protein, and a bunch of spinach, right? And so one morning, Amanda says, "So what's that like?" And he's, "Oh, get glasses." And so we grab glasses out of the writer's little snack cubby, and he goes off to his office and grabs a thermos, and we try it, and it's tasty. It's delicious. And we say so, and then the next morning, without him saying anything, these two pitchers of the stuff start showing up in our refrigerator every morning. Okay. So we start taking these Ewa Libre drinks, breaks, we call them. Ewa being the sort of planetary consciousness from the first movie.
Yep.
And then 2 weeks, so that goes on for 2 weeks, and then his assistant rolls through the door 2 weeks later, and there are 6 Vitamix blenders on the cart that she's pushing. And he gives us each a Vitamix blender so we can continue to
do the juice.
Make your own. And that's like a $450 blender. Wow. It actually had come up in discussions previously as we were talking about disposing of bodies. He says, yeah, you need a wood chipper or a Vitamix blender. You could put a baseball bat into a Vitamix blender.
That's funny because I was just at Inbound 2014 in Boston, which is this gigantic marketing conference. And Martha Stewart was one of the keynotes on one of the last days. And she started her keynote up on stage making the power juice thing that she does every morning. Mm-hmm. And while she's doing this, the staff of the convention center are rolling through, and 10,000 people are each getting a little cup of her juice. And so we all got it, and we all had to try it and taste it. It was pretty good.
So, yes, we are now all cultists.
So what you're saying is the next Avatar movies that are going to come out are going to be – there's going to be some product placement of the Vitamix blenders. This is what you're saying.
Probably not. Probably not. No.
But it's cool that you get to write the books too. So are these like extended universe books?
Well, they're actually – correspond to the movies, including the first one, which has never been done.
Okay.
And so that's the one I'm working on right now, the book that corresponds to movie one. But I'm able to do things that couldn't have been done because I know key elements to foreshadow for the next 3 movies. Uh-huh. So there will be things foreshadowed. I'm also free to write storylines that weave sideways in and out of the existing storyline that include characters that will be in the next movies or not necessarily even that, just people who, you know, aren't there. So I can explain a lot more than you can in the movie. I can fill in the world somewhat.
Sure. I've spoken before with Vonda McIntyre, who got to do a lot of the Star Trek novelizations based off of the movies. And it's the same kind of thing. You know, she kind of got to go and explain a little bit more. And that's where we found out Savick was half Romulan, which was never really mentioned in the movies. So that's cool.
Wow. Yeah, that's... and of course, there's always a danger when you explain too much.
Sure.
Because when you leave stuff unexplained, the fans bend over backwards to justify and qualify it, and sometimes come up with much better explanations than you ever did. A bad explanation is a real awful thing. How many times have we heard, what is the actual, what did he really mean when he said he did the Kessel Run in 14 parsecs?
Well, I think that's a good place to end on. Stephen, once again, we have the new book out, EXO, E-X-O. It's the fourth book in the Jumper series. I believe the rest of the books are getting re-released as well. Am I correct there, Stephen?
Well, they've all been in print.
Right.
But they re-released
a
trade paperback edition of Jumper that has a cover thematic that's trying to match into the new cover.
Okay.
And I suspect that we might be seeing then re-releases of Reflex in this same sort of package to try and bring it all together. It's a little tricky for my publisher because I actually own the ebook rights for the first two, my first five novels, in fact. I actually produced those myself. And so they can't unify their treatment of the ebooks as much as they can the print books.
Mm. Interesting. So, but anyway, the EXO is out now. So go and pick it up. And once again, Stephen's website is eatourbrains.com/Steve. And you can follow him on Twitter at Stephen Gould. And do you have any con appearances or anything like that coming up, Stephen?
I will be at World Fantasy for SIFO Business, but I'll be around. And I will be at the New York Author Editors Reception October 6th on the East Coast. And I think we're going to do I think I'm doing an event at Barnes & Noble the Thursday after that in New York City.
Excellent, yeah.
And I've got a local signing back in Albuquerque on the 26th, maybe. I don't know. It's a Saturday late in September.
Excellent. All sounds good. And World Fantasy is in Washington, D.C. this year. So if you're in the area, I'd say check that out. That was one of my favorite cons that we went to a couple years ago. So excellent, Stephen. For me this week, check out my music over at my website, johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And Patrick, what do you have this week?
Usual stuff, SF Signal, Hugo Award-winning podcast. Woohoo! I would like to thank Stephen for continuing to support Writer Beware blog. I love that blog. I know that it's not necessarily Stephen continuing to support, but he, as the president of SIFWA, you know, I'm sure he gets a say in it. Just like I'd like to thank him for John Klima.
Yeah.
Love John. John's awesome.
John is great. And so is Victoria Strauss and the guys over at Writer Beware. We actually do end up having to do things both on a legal level. There are stupid, bogus, cease and desist attempts from scam publishers that SIFWA is active in defending. And yeah, we just. But they're just such a valuable resource that we've got to keep them going.
Yeah, I love them.
Excellent. And so, Patrick, you have your website, atfmb.com, and your Twitter, at atfmb.
All things from my brain. That's me.
Excellent. Okay, everybody. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on. And everybody, we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mo.
Say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.